This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, small school. See us dancing to this. What song came into our heads yesterday that sounded kind of similar? I want to love you, touch you, to wrap my world around you.
Very similar.
It came up during the show, so I just thought that was probably it. Maybe in my head the two go together, I don't know. Good morning, CliffCentral.com. On a Wednesday, it's the 16th of January already. We are still in the peak of summer. Whew, it was hot yesterday.
Oh, you're so hot.
I know it's boring to talk about the weather, but really it's very hard to get anything done when it's as hot as that. You try to be productive, but you just... You can't sleep, you can't... You actually just have to be cooled down.
Ugh.
Something has to happen. You walk around with a wet cloth on your head or something. Some people have very bizarre ways of dealing with it.
Or get yourself a drink. Whatever floats your boat.
Do what Sia says.
Get yourself a drink.
It's an interesting point you raise there, Sia. So, you know, when you transition from holidays to real life again,
yes.
Like, when do you physically start saying, no, I actually can't have a glass of wine right now? Or, no, I can't keep having a gin and tonic?
It happened to me last week. I left work in the early afternoon and I was meeting up with somebody, and then I had the opportunity to order a drink and I said no. But for me, it happened last week.
What, like, what time was that?
3:30.
But that wouldn't have been detrimental.
No.
To
sure, but I mean, this is the adult life, right? This is what we have to get to at a certain stage, especially at Gareth's age, is that you can't decide. You can decide.
I caught that shade.
But like in holidays, you're like, yeah, I'll have it. I drank a lot in holidays. And then now it's like, well, you drink now. Suddenly you're drinking every day again. Not as productive.
Yeah, I can't do drinking in the week. I've declared a moratorium on it. I just can't.
We've discussed this plenty of time. Ben, your definition of drinking a lot is like 2 glasses of wine and you're out for the count.
No, like during the holidays, because I had that back issue last year. Then I drove down to Cape Town, which didn't help.
Oh.
And I had to be on gin and tonics.
So that's kind of what it was, a coping mechanism.
It was a coping mechanism just to get to the evening with half a smile on my face because the mornings were tough.
All right, a few messages here. Yes, it's Ben mentioned F1. Thank you, says someone on an English number. Migs is back. He says, guys, have you checked out Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend? It's a podcast. It's really good. He's got Wanda Sykes in. She's so funny. I miss her a lot. Yeah, she hasn't really been doing a lot of stand-up recently. I think she got married and she had a kid. And
no, she has 2 kids.
2 kids, right. Quentin in Namibia says, Ben, we in Namibia pay the same amount for DSTV subscription, but we don't get all the sport, especially the overseas cricket and boxing.
Yeah, you've mentioned this before. It's ridiculous.
So he's angry with DSTV. A lot of people are angry with DSTV. They feel like they're being ripped off. Morning team, talking about this Kenya attack, I was working there when the last attack occurred in September 2013, remember, in that shopping mall. Luckily, I'd just come back home for the weekend and I was flying on the day that they attacked the Westgate Mall. I had to turn around at the airport. I was so happy to have just missed that. I did go back a month later, though. Yeah, that's interesting. I remember that happening. You know, you think Kenya's this kind of... It's this rising star in some ways for... It certainly was for a long time in Africa. It was all anyone was talking about 5 years ago. They were talking about M-Pesa, and they were talking about the Silicon Savannah, which was based outside of Nairobi, and It had all this opportunity and this possibility. And it seems to me like Kenya slid backwards. Much like Zimbabwe, we were all excited when Robert Mugabe was deposed by Mnangagwa and the rest of the ZANU-PF military establishment. But of course, that's gone backwards too. So you get your hopes up and then these things happen. Mm. It's a little bit of disillusion creeping, and reality, to be fair, creeping back into the world. And it doesn't make me very happy because I am an optimist. Let's look at a couple of stories. First of all, you know Lisa Simpson, right? Bart Simpson's sister.
Mm-hmm.
How old is Lisa Simpson now? 30 years old. The character has been around 30 years. I don't know how old. She's meant to stay
so
the same age.
Yes. It's her age plus 30?
I think so.
It's like 42?
Well, here's the woman who does the voice of Lisa Simpson.
She was 80.
She was interviewed on an American talk show, and she was talking about what it's like to play Lisa Simpson for 30 years.
Simpson. Has she changed over the years? Has she evolved? There's this constant debate about the characters and whether they are the same now as they were 30 years ago, or whether these characters actually, like most real-life characters, whether they do grow.
Absolutely, they grow. Although the funny thing is, Lisa Simpson is 8, and every time she has a birthday, she turns 8. So we're gonna talk about that. What? What's the problem with that? Lisa Simpson, you know, her... One of the things I love about her most is her resilience, because they put that girl through so much.
Oh my God.
Every time they give her something, she never gets to keep it. 22 minutes later, she doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether it's a friend or a pony or in anything, the fact that that girl still feels like the glass is half full is extraordinary to me.
But, you know, to me, this almost seems like it's come full circle, in that Lisa would be the person who would investigate Chief Hibbard. You know, she was looking at, you know, small town crime.
She would.
In Springfield.
And with enormous empathy.
Yes.
You know what?
Yeah, that's. Wow. Well, she sounds like Lisa in real life, doesn't she? And she's on the Today Show. God, they ask stupid questions on the Today Show.
There's a bit of an extra bit of a squeak that Lisa usually has. But I think that would be your party trick. I would love if I was in her shoes. I'll just call the pizza company.
Hey, this is Lisa.
Yes, yeah. To order like that. I think that would be so cool. Who's the order for? Lisa. And just leave it like that. I think it would
be
cool.
All these people who work animation do it all the time.
I'm sure when they're busy.
Get bored.
Yeah, when they're busy recording, they'll probably order pizza in the voices in the first week, and then after that, it gets bored. They get bored. They get annoyed with each other.
To be doing it for 30 years.
Well, talking about anniversaries, it's 10 years since that plane landed on the Hudson River.
Wow.
I know.
So 2008.
Doesn't feel like that. It's 10 years since Sully Sullenberger, the captain, landed that plane on the Hudson.
I remember seeing that on the front page of our news, and I remember I was at school and was at reception, and just seemed like such a crazy story.
Bizarre, right?
And the fact that everyone survived.
Everyone survived. It was landed on the icy river. Emergency services kicked in, but that guy had such incredible patience and presence of mind. I mean, to be able to land on our river, a big plane like that, in very difficult circumstances. Where do you land in New York? It's skyscrapers everywhere. There are bridges across every river.
It's the river. It's the only place.
That piece of river, because if he'd been a little bit further up, he wouldn't have been able to land there.
Yeah.
There are lots of crossings. And I mean, it's just absolutely awesome. I took the Lincoln Tunnel under the Hudson River when I went into New York. And you go under there. It's a wide river.
Mm.
It's a long way to go. You get on the other side and you go, there's no way a guy could have landed there. I looked at it from... the High Line, which is this sort of old railway track that they now have turned into a walkway on the west side of Manhattan. And you look at that Hudson River, and it looks enormous, but to land a plane on it, I mean, you imagine people in those buildings. They're just going about their day. And they look out of the window, and there's a plane.
Well, New York's not a great place to see planes.
No.
Not a great history
with flying at low altitude. And then to land. I mean, what an incredible guy. So apparently what he did is he reunited with passengers from that emergency Hudson River landing 10 years later. Can you imagine what that felt like? Did you ever watch the movie?
Oh, by Tom Hanks.
Yo, what did they put him through?
It's called Sully, and it's a very, very powerful movie, not just because of the story that we know, but a lot of things that we didn't know before that, which is the fact that the captain was put under strenuous investigation.
Yeah,
because it's all good and well to make a powerful headline, but then he was asked, you know, why exactly that?
And what if the cameras turned off?
And
the cameras turned off, and then suddenly he was investigated from top to bottom, and they picked the guy to pieces to try and find out whether or not he'd done the best thing he could have done. They determined that it was virtually impossible to have done what he did, and yet he went ahead and did it. And he trusted his instinct, which is something that investigators never like, and that the people who make the rules never like. They want the machines to make the decisions. They want 100% certainty. None of that's possible in an emergency.
Yikes.
Yeah, here's a little bit of that reunion with the passengers 10 years later. Miracle on the Hudson is what they called it.
See you.
How are you doing?
That's where you guys haven't changed at all.
Oh, it was like a family reunion. Lots of hugs and stories to tell.
I'm Barry Leonard, and I was sitting in 1C.
I was seated in 20C.
12F.
Passengers from flight 1549 remember exactly where they were 10 years ago. Their seat number, a badge of honor.
What's it like being here today in the shadow of this plane?
Surreal. Appreciation for all these extra days we didn't think we would get.
Facing death and escaping it, Eric Stevenson. That's him kneeling on the wing. He remembers writing a goodbye note on a business card tucked in his pocket.
To my mom and to my sister, I love you. At least it would be near my body, and they knew I was thinking of them as we were going down.
Jim Whitaker, seen here after being rescued, remembers helping a panicked mother sitting next to him. He offered to hold her 9-month-old son.
So it's amazing how tough children are, but a 9-month-old baby turned sideways can be held just like a football. And at 150 miles an hour hitting that water, it was truly an amazing experience that that child didn't even cry until we came to a complete stop.
The miracle on the Hudson. The incredible controlled landing of the U.S. Airways Airbus struck by a flock of geese, paralyzing both engines.
I ran out into my balcony, and I saw it make a splash landing. It never submerged.
As a nation watched, all 155 people on board survived.
That's how I knew we were alive, because that water, I could feel it coming up my legs very quickly, and it was so cold, I couldn't believe it.
The passengers say that they divide their lives simply into before and after, and that they now know the true meaning of a bucket list.
In March, I'm gonna take my family to India. We're going to meet the Dalai Lama. I'm actually going to jump out of a plane from 18,000 feet instead of 5 feet.
I'm way too young for a bucket list. I don't know what you mean. I've been given a gift. Mm-hmm. So every day, to me, it's making a significant positive influence on someone's life.
As for Captain Sullenberger, he says he doesn't believe in miracles, that everything worked as it should.
I think at a time when we all needed it, it gave us hope. And so I think being the stewards of this story and a part of this living history, I think is what gives us a purpose, too.
When you live through something like this, against all odds, passengers all have the same message for their hero.
Thank you forever. Thank you for eternity.
Thank you for saving our lives.
Mm-hmm. If the same thing or a similar thing happened today, would the outcome necessarily be the same? And could you do it again?
Wasn't once enough?
That's a good point. Sure, 10 years ago that happened. It's a big story.
Oof. It's quite a lot to think about the man who was bracing himself for death to the point where he wrote that love letter on a business card.
Mm-hmm. It's like, if I don't make it.
Because the last thing you want to hear your pilot say is, okay, guys, emergency landing. Firstly, that's freaky enough.
Yeah.
Secondly, oh yeah, we're just going to land on the river.
Speaking of death or near death.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever given, I know we've probably touched this before, but have you given much of a thought what you want your remains to be when you're dead?
What do you mean, like bones, ashes?
What do you want to do with your remains? This pile of nothing once you die.
Well, I've often upset people around me by saying I want to be embalmed like the Egyptians forever. So mummified. But that's just...
And then put where?
Yeah.
In a glass case where everyone can see me.
For how long?
But
as
where,
long
though?
As possible.
Do you want to be in Sandton Square? Do you want to be your parents? Where do you want to be showcased?
No, I know exactly where I'm going.
Where?
We've got a family graveyard, and all of them are buried out there, and I'll just probably be cremated and buried with them. That's what will really happen.
Okay. See ya.
Wait, is that a thing? You're cremated and then you're also put into the ground?
Yeah. And I take your ashes and they put it.
One of those.
No.
I've never really thought about it. I've always known that I don't want to be buried.
What a morbid thing to bring up on a Wednesday morning, Ben. Why?
I don't know.
Well, people now are wanting their ashes to be cremated and then be put into a vinyl. Compressed and put into an actual vinyl record.
A record.
Yeah.
Then you would basically play your...
Yes.
Wow.
But this is becoming a big thing with iGen, basically people under the age of 25, because surveying them is a good idea for some reason. But this is quite an interesting thought, though. You can be made into a vinyl.
But who still even has vinyl player.
And lots of people do.
Get your head out of your ass.
Especially
yeah,
people, the hipsters.
They yeah. love this kind of stuff because it's like retro and stuff. But it's kind of a cool idea. We often pull the piss of iGen or young mm-hmm. people, that kind of stuff. But this is a pretty cool idea. Obviously, it depends on which song. I mean, if the song's really morbid and your ashes are in it, it's not so great. But I mean, like George Michael's Careless Whisper or Bruno Mars's Uptown Funk, you know, you can get really creative with this. So then it's like, rather than having your ashes in some stupid urn, it's on a vinyl. And it's that song. The next question is, what song do you want to be compressed into?
Right. Because essentially what you are at the end of that is just a whole lot of carbon. And you could turn that into anything. Some people make it into a diamond.
Yes, this is the next point. Like press
it into a diamond.
This is another cool thing you can do, or a hugely sad thing. So say, for instance, you're a young couple and one of you dies, and that one gets into a diamond and you wear that ring.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I could do that. Make you cry every day.
That's quite depressing.
Maybe
but
I'm
I
speaking,
love this idea of being made into a vinyl.
Maybe I'm speaking because I haven't really experienced such huge grief, but I think this prolongs the grieving process. Next thing, okay, so your loved one is now a vinyl record, and then your house gets burgled, and now it's even worse. Oh, Auntie Merle is now somewhere.
Stole Auntie Merle.
Well, look,
or then you have a toddler at home, and the toddler's playing around, and the record player falls to the floor, and now you're screaming at the toddler because technically they've killed Auntie Merle again. I don't know.
But this is the thing. So the survey, which I find interesting, is that young people are still very sentimental about death and that kind of stuff, and they want tombstones, that kind of stuff. As you get older, you give less of a shit as well. You become more practical. And like, why do I want to spend all that money? I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
So young people have these fantastic ideas
vinyl
on what
record.
To do. But I think this vinyl thing is pretty cool.
What do you want to do, Ben? Would you do that?
No, I still believe that my ashes should be scattered over a golf course of my choosing. I know that sounds so predictable, but sometimes you've got to play to your strengths in life.
All right, okay. Who's this dude over here?
That's Chotso. Chotso,
right?
Yes.
All right, so Chotso, get up to the microphone there, Chotso. Is he interning for us for the day?
Yeah. He's coming here to scout the place.
I always like to meet the interns. Hey, Chotso, what's up?
Oh, morning, sir. How are you?
Good. Well, how's it going, dude? Are you having fun? Yesterday you were sitting looking at me, and I didn't want to ask who you were, and you didn't want to tell me who you were, and I just kind of ignored you.
Everything's doing well, so I'm actually kind of enjoying the place. I love the show.
You're sitting with Spongula there and learning from her?
I'm learning a lot from her, sir.
What do you do? What's your background?
My background?
What have you studied, or where have you been? Or?
Well, I'm a young man from Dobsonville Gardens in Soweto.
Mm-hmm.
I'm studying BCom in journalism.
Oh, wow. Well,
I'm studying a BA in communication science at UNISA.
Wow.
I'm trying to venture into radio.
How hard is it to get a job?
Hard, very difficult. You know, I think that's why I'm here. I'm trying to get all the mentorship and learnership I can, learn as much as I can.
Is it just because there aren't a lot of opportunities, or is it also because people don't reply to you when you tell them that you...
I think some people, it's pretty much... I think when you go to people asking for help, they probably think you want a job.
Mm.
It's not always about wanting a job. I think being young, sometimes it's just being granted an opportunity to learn, and that's basically what I want. And that's what I've been given you for the past 2 days.
All right, well,
I'm enjoying it.
I hope it gives you something in return, dude. You know, it's a tough job market out there. So what do you want to do, radio?
Radio, I actually want to be a radio presenter.
You know, that's not really a job anymore, right?
Well, it is.
Not really.
It's like a fax machine salesman. I mean,
yeah,
some
it's like
it,
a video
really.
Store owner. Remember those guys?
Because
radio is, it's, you know, it's dying, right? I mean, it's not, there isn't a lot of opportunity. All the radio superstars have come and gone. They're no more.
Okay.
I mean, who's the biggest name in radio right now?
Well, you're doing it right now.
No, but I'm not on radio, so this is online. But who's the biggest name in radio right now?
Currently, there isn't any, to
right.
be honest.
And do you think anyone's going to come up suddenly? Save
if
the medium? You think?
100%.
Is it going to be you?
It's definitely me.
All right. Well, I'll hold out hope. I mean,
power
you seem like
people.
A good guy. I wish you luck.
Thanks a lot, sir.
All
appreciate
right.
it.
Very good. God, I wouldn't. Ugh. Like you say, it's a fax machine salesman job, radio.
I know it sounds dick when we say that to young aspiring people who want to get into the medium, but reality is reality of how entertainment's worked and evolving.
The last radio superstars, and by that I mean people who get paid over $100,000 a month to do a radio show, have come and gone. They finished. There are no more of those people. They finished. It's done.
They're vinyl records?
Yeah. They're vinyl records. You compress them into vinyl records. In fact, I can think of a lot of DJs, even if they're not dead yet, just compress them into a vinyl record anyway. It could be their best contribution to humanity.
How about you don't name whoever you think?
Yeah, I won't name them. Don't worry.
Okay.
We've got Christy Jackson popping in a short while, an entrepreneur, speaker, and a founder of the Women CEO Project, which we'll talk about. She's actually from Texas, and she's in South Africa. We'll find out why in a short while. What else is going on in the news?
Well, Gareth, corgi pants.
What?
Yeah, you know, people, when they talk about corgis, they always say, oh, what delightful backsides they have.
No, come on now.
Do they?
It's a story, okay? I only bring you the biggest things in the world. Corgis have delightful bottoms. That's what they're known for. Why didn't the Queen had so many?
My sister has a corgi. She has a fat ass. Mm. She looks like one of those...
You're talking about the corgi, not your sister.
You know there are a lot of women who wear... No, the corgi. Don't get me into trouble. You know there are a lot of women who wear those pants that are much too tight for them when they're like morbidly obese.
Yes.
Now, that's their prerogative. I don't have any say, and I'm not going to tell anybody how to dress. But you know how the backside sometimes goes, jiggle, 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 left and then right and then left, and that's what a corgi looks like when it walks.
So now you can have that on said tight pants on,
So what do? They print like the backside of a corgi onto your pants.
Gareth, it's the opening trend of 2019. You can get a corgi's ass basically put onto... tight-fitting pants.
Jiggle, jiggle.
So that you have the corgi jiggle, effect jiggle. When you walk.
All right.
It's a thing. It's happening. It's the thing.
God help us.
Really.
I'm hearing a lot of very disturbing stuff. Do you want a warning at the beginning of the year?
Oh, geez. What are you hearing?
So this 10-year challenge, which everybody's participating in, conspiracy theorists are saying it's Facebook's way of getting their facial recognition algorithm polished, trying to make sure that they can calculate aging, so that they can figure out what you'll look like in 10 years' time. Because it's fine if their facial software, their facial recognition software, works on your face of 10 years ago. But what if you age? So people are saying this whole thing was started so that people will upload pictures of themselves 10 years ago and now, so that the facial recognition algorithm can compare them and be able to tell even if you're 10 years older.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So they're gathering your information. That's what the conspiracy theorists are saying. Zuckerberg has used this whole thing to try to figure out how to polish up and make his facial recognition algorithm better. What do you think of that?
I wouldn't put it off, or... even if they didn't intend on that, or they didn't create it, and they're seeing all of this, I think it's only makes sense for them to make use of the moment. So they probably are taking all of this in.
I have seen thousands of people showing off pictures of what they looked like 10 years ago. Mm. Right. Those are the pictures usually, because 10 years ago people weren't already on social media. Now social media is even getting into the life you had before social media. So that bugged me. I didn't take part in this 10-year challenge.
Yeah.
Even if, 2008 doesn't feel like that long ago. 2009 now, because 2019. Doesn't feel like that long ago. But we weren't really uploading millions of pictures of ourselves like we are today.
No, of course not.
Mm. So now Facebook, Instagram, that's all owned by the same dude.
We're just handing all of this to them.
Giving them info that they didn't even have access to before. I see people putting up pictures of what they looked like as a child 10 years ago. You know, if they're 18 now. Go back 10 years, you were 8. Think about that. And you're suddenly giving Zuckerberg a picture of you at 8 years old so that he can figure out how to improve his facial recognition software. Huh?
Oh, jeez.
How do you like that for a conspiracy theory, everybody? That's going to pollute your Wednesday morning with nasty thoughts.
This challenge actually also... let me, because in the buzz of everything, of people comparing how we are today as how we were 10 years ago, I actually decided to go back.
Did you find a picture?
I did find pictures, and I told you the other day I'm not going to post it. But I went onto my account to see what I was posting 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That in and of itself, you know, we don't really go, you know, if you have a Facebook account, it's called Activity Log, and you can go back year by year to see what you were posting.
What did you find?
Oh, geez, thank goodness for maturity.
What did you find?
Oh, well, I thought the same thing this week. Yes, wow, have I evolved as a person.
It was just so cringeworthy. I was quoting Michael Jackson songs.
Oh, you still do.
Yeah, so consistency is key. I was talking about how much I love school and how much it stresses me out. I'm like, please, 13-year-old Sia, you have no idea what's going to come your way. If you're stressed out by a spelling test, you have no idea what taxes and... working life will do to you. We should all just do it once in a while for the shits and giggles.
But this should also make us all a lot more forgiving about what people do and say that's wrong now, especially young people. Like, everybody climbs into anyone who says anything on social media that they don't like. If you post a picture that's embarrassing, everybody says something about it. Like, just remember what you were like.
Mm.
When you were that age.
Rich Mulholland actually made a good point on Twitter recently, you know, because there was that Gordon Ramsay clip with Sofia Vergara that was being spread.
Oh, right.
And everyone was saying, oh, Gordon, this is so cringe. This is what Me Too is all about. And you think, like, when we were younger and we weren't so, like, judged and all that kind of stuff, we all acted like dumbasses at some stage.
There just wasn't a record of it.
But also, people didn't judge you at absolutely everything you did.
Right.
And, you know, you've got to be more compassionate about this kind of stuff. Not to say that, you know.
Give people a break.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I'm very impressed. A lot of these 10-year challenge people that I've been, I've seen in my feed, a lot of them look way better now than they did 10 years ago. And I'm not talking about just the effects of maturity and all the stuff that Ben and Sia were just saying now about how you evolve as a person, you become better, but better looking. Like, it is possible to be better looking at 40 than you were at 30. It is possible to be better looking at 30 than you were at 20, even though you've advanced 10 years in age. You fit your body better. You fit
grow
your
into
face
yourself.
Better. You grow into yourself.
You grow into your big ears and your big nose.
A lot of time you grow into your looks.
Doesn't look too bad.
Like, if I look at some of the pictures of some of these people who are good looking people now, and you look back 10 years, you're like, wow, you look terrible.
Yeah.
So don't feel bad. The ravages of age come with a couple of just a few advantages. Not a ton, but a few advantages. Embrace them. All right, on the way, we're going to speak to Christy L. Jackson, entrepreneur, speaker, founder of the Women CEO Project in South Africa, visiting from Texas. We're going to find out all about her. That's next. I'm for men, you're for wife, perfect strangers in the night. Here we are. Kygo with Conrad Soul and Firestone. All right, cliffcentral.com, Wednesday morning. If you listen to us on podcast, it could be any day of the week or twice on Sundays. That's the nice thing about what we do. You can get hold of us and you can listen whenever it suits you, whatever you want to hear. It's all available. Lots of shows, lots of different things that you might be interested in. One of those shows is called For the Love of Law. And today at 8 a.m., we bring you another episode in our series of For the Love of Law, where we take you behind the desks of some of South Africa's smartest lawyers. Peter Kemp is one of them. He may look like he just stepped off the set of Suits, but he isn't an actor. He's been a partner at Fluxman's since 2011. He's a specialist in mergers and acquisitions, equity and debt funding, corporate structuring, information technology, all aspects of BEE, funding and producing films, general corporate and commercial law, and a whole lot more. You can find out all about Peter and some of the other interesting lawyers at Fluxman's by going to cliffcentral.com. For the Love of Law is brought to you by Fluxman's Attorneys, one of South Africa's leading law firms. You can get special insight into how it all works, how it all happens, who these lawyers are, what goes on behind the scenes. It's fascinating, particularly if you're going to go into law, and even if you're not. If you're just an observer, you're just someone on the outside who's interested in these things. All right, it's Wednesday morning. It's just after 7:30. We've got a very interesting guest in this morning. It's great bringing people with global perspectives into the show. And this morning, I'm interested to pick Christy L. Jackson's brain about her take on a wide variety of topics. She's from Texas. She's a White House recognized innovator and entrepreneur. She's also an author, speaker, publisher, global business strategist, and the founder of the Women CEO Project. Now, more than just hearing her views on things, I'm also keen to find out what she's doing here in South Africa. So welcome, Christy. Nice to have you here. What a pleasure to welcome you to our studio this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for waking up so early.
No problem. We still have jet lag.
So you're in Houston most of the time.
I am in Houston, Texas, yes.
I've been to Houston once. What an interesting place. It's like such a dynamic, busy, happening place. So you've got so much interesting stuff going on there.
Yes. We have so many different races, so many, you know, different people that come to the city. It's a very entrepreneurial city and also very hot. Very
damn
hot.
Right. Yeah, except when occasionally it floods, but that doesn't happen too often, thank goodness. Now, you're the recent winner of Houston's 40 Under 40 Young Business Professionals. So I imagine that might be one of the reasons you're in South Africa. What are you here to do?
I am here to host a women's business retreat.
Uh-huh.
And South Africa is my fifth largest market.
Oh, really?
Yes. Out of all of the cities, social media.
Yeah.
I reach women all over the world, and I actually absolutely love this country.
So what does this retreat involve? Is it a bunch of women CEOs who get together and share ideas, perhaps find new networking opportunities, give each other advice, tell their stories? How exactly does it go down?
Well, one of the things that I like to focus on with whatever I teach, I focus on the money angle. Because women don't talk about that enough. We talk about how good something makes us feel. We talk about the community aspect. But we don't talk about, okay, all of that's great. How do we make money from this?
Yep.
How do we write our books in a way that make us money? How do we write proposals in a way that make us money? How do we business develop? How do we go outside of our borders into other countries and seek other opportunities? So the retreat is, I'm a business strategist, a global business strategist. Day in and day out, I work with women entrepreneurs. Some of them are current entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Some of them are aspiring. I work with them on their business development. How can they get bigger deals? I work with them on their sales, on their marketing. How do they leverage social media? How do they leverage offline marketing? So I found that women, it doesn't matter the culture. It doesn't matter the location. They have some of the exact same needs.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to just be in the U.S. I love to travel. I love to meet new people. I'm very open-minded. And, you know, since this is one of my largest markets, I definitely wanted to come here and, you know, have an opportunity to work with some women face-to-face.
So what kinds of things keep coming up when women CEOs or women entrepreneurs get together? What are the issues that they keep talking about that they are most interested in discussing and finding solutions for?
Finding money.
Really?
Yes. Finding capital to start their business, to grow their business. In the United States, the average woman starts her business with less than $500. A lot of people don't know that.
Mm.
You can look at some of the biggest businesses owned by women that you see. A lot of them started with less than $500. So one thing about women is that once they learn something, once they learn a skill, they typically share it with their community.
Right.
So when I teach women, I'm not just teaching one woman. I'm teaching a community of women. So, I mean, that is my goal. But a lot of women come with the same issues. How do I get the startup money? Once I get that money, I know I'm going to soar. But how do I get that startup money? That is universal.
I would imagine that it's probably difficult for anyone to get startup money, particularly in a market like South Africa at the moment. But what makes it extra hard for women? Is it that men won't put their money where women are?
Well, I think that when a man, for example, when a man says he's going to start a business, people think Mark Zuckerberg. Hmm. When women say they're going to start a business, they think about her crocheting and beading jackets in her attic. They don't think about, you know, oh, wait, this woman could actually start a really profitable business. One of my top clients, we started at in the six figures when we met about a year and a half ago. The goal was 1 million. We just hit 1 million in a year and a half, 1,017,000. No one took her business seriously. You know, she made natural organic skincare products in her kitchen. No one took her business seriously. They do now.
Do you think that that's just a like a straightforward chauvinism and sexism, or do you think that there's more to it? I mean, women are expected also to handle a whole lot of things that perhaps don't fall into the category of things that men traditionally care about or that men have to worry about. You know, the house, the children, the husband, the things that she has to do anyway, apart from the fact that she wants to be successful and the fact that she has to try and balance all of this stuff the whole time. I mean, all of that comes into it, right?
That is such an awesome question because people don't really talk about it. And you're absolutely correct. Other than the normal factors of, okay, are you really serious? Is this business really going to make money? You're a woman. Then there's all that other stuff because we still really have 24 hours in the day. And I'm recently engaged. My fiance
congratulations.
Here.
Congratulations. Very nice.
And it is different. Mm-hmm. I've been in business 16 years. It is different when you have a mate. Mm-hmm. But no one talks about that. There is a component of, okay, I have another person I have to factor in. What if you have children? What if you have a household? So that is something that I touch on as well in some of my private sessions because it is a lot for women to balance because for a lot of us, we want to be good in multiple areas. We don't want to just have a great house, but then you're not a businesswoman or you're a great businesswoman and you don't have a house. You don't have a home.
Or worse, that you have to sacrifice something you really enjoy or that you want to do because you're expected to compete with men in the commercial realm, for example.
Yes. And there, you have to compete. Mm. You have to compete. You can't say, okay, like I remember hearing a woman say many years ago when I first started in business, she was like, hey, you can't stop, you know, your meeting because you have on heels and your feet hurt. You need to bring flats and you need to go to the meeting with him. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, we still have to compete. We still have to, you know, at the end of the day, does your business make money? At the end of the day, yeah, just like a man, does your business make money?
The market doesn't really care, right? That's it the horrible, care. Sad, hard reality is that the market doesn't care about how hard you had it, whether you were one of 12 kids, whether your mom or dad ever gave you anything.
They don't care.
They don't. The market doesn't care. It, like, if either you produce a product that the market's interested in or you don't. Do you think, though, that the cost of failure is higher for women? Because you have to fail a few times, particularly if you're an entrepreneur and you're doing things on your own. You have to be willing to fail. You have to be willing to risk it all. Do you think that the cost of doing that is higher for women?
No. I think that our mindset around failure is a little worse than for a man. Like when men are children, they're told to kind of go out, explore. Women are always taught to be careful.
Yeah.
We're taught to be careful, be safe. Don't go there. Be careful.
Don't risk it all.
Don't risk. So if
be
that's
happy
been,
with what you've got, like conserve what you have, grow what you got, but don't risk it.
Don't risk it. And so our mindset around risk, it's kind of like not our fault. Since we were little girls, we've been told to be careful, and boys were pushed out to explore. So our mindset around failure is the whole world is going to fall apart. And if you're a current or aspiring woman entrepreneur, that's one of the best things that you can get under your belt is go on and fail a few times. I failed at so many things. My fiance's been in business 26 years. We were discussing yesterday morning how sometimes people – they get into that first period where they're not doing well and they're like, oh, no, I'm quitting.
Yeah.
But they haven't been in business long enough to know it has cycles. Mm-hmm. And if you've made money on it before, if you just kind of stick with it through this rough patch, you're probably going to go back up, you know.
But there is another element to this. And since your focus is on women CEOs, and I want to talk a little bit about the Women CEO Project in a minute. But there's another thing about this is that women are cooperative, men are competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the business environment is geared towards competitiveness rather than cooperation. Yes. I mean, in some places that's changing. So it can be an advantage and it can be a disadvantage, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's one of the skills that, like, women come to the table with a little bit more they're able to work with teams a lot better. Women are very good negotiators. So we have some innate skills that, you know, are strong, but then there are some other skills that we need to pick up. We need to learn how to put our price out there. We need to learn how, hey, we can't feel sorry for ourselves. We're competing. Let's compete. Because at the end of the day, brands, companies, partners, collaborations, they just want to know, did you make money? I always tell my women, the score is the score. Did we make money or did we not make money? Because that's all these brands and these partners care about.
So what is the Women's CEO Project?
So the Women's CEO Project is a global business consulting firm. And I specifically work with women entrepreneurs. I've been hired by men, but I specifically work with women entrepreneurs day in and day out on their business strategy, their business development, their sales, and their marketing. I take some of them from the aspiring area, but I really prefer women who've already started, because that kind of taps into my best skills. I think that someone who's starting up needs a different coach, but someone who's kind of already in the mix, that's where they tap into my best skills, and I help them take where they are and we increase it. How do we become more effective and more efficient, but we're not, that doesn't mean that you work more. How do we make more money leveraging social media? How do we make more money with you possibly writing a proposal instead of working from one to one, you work from one to many. Mm-hmm. So I come in and I kind of go and analyze their business. It's what my degree is in, my mastery level degree. But I just chose to do it for myself as opposed to doing it for, you know, management consulting for a company.
I think that's terrific. And in South Africa, you've said that this is one of the biggest territories for you.
It's my fifth largest market.
So that's amazing. We obviously have in South Africa, we're in a position now where we're trying to increase the amount of influence and the jobs that are available to women, particularly in the higher sort of echelons of any business. And in South Africa, we have a number of women leaders who've really distinguished themselves. But what do you think it is that we could do better in South Africa from your observations from the outside? I mean, the kinds of questions that you get, the sort of people you interact with in South Africa, what should we be doing better?
Be open-minded. Be open-minded. I was talking to a girl last night who's really young. I have 10-plus years on her. She's probably one of the smartest people I've met in a long time. And she was so talented and so skilled. And I thought, oh, my God, how quickly can I add her to my team? You know? But for some, they might have been like, how old are you? Like, you're really young. You know,
dismissed,
how many degrees do you
because
have?
Because she had no experience.
Immediately. Yeah. And I'm just listening to her speak. And I know what books I've read and how much I read and how much I study. This girl knew what she was talking about. She was very young. She didn't have a degree. You know, she didn't finish, but she knew what she was talking about. And so I would suggest being open-minded. I've found that a lot of people have a lot of skills and talent to share.
So you got to open them up, get them out there.
You have to be open-minded to maybe the package doesn't look exactly the way you would want it to look, but what is the skill or the talent there?
I was interested in you because I read that you are the co-owner of a trucking business, among other things. Now, that's not something that a lot of women would get into.
Yes.
But a trucking business, a logistics company, you have three trucks and plans to create a full fleet of them within the next 5 years. I mean, that's a really hard business.
Yes, it is. My husband started that business. Okay. It's actually, I'm a partner with him in the business. And, you know, as we've been, you know, starting the business and getting everything going, it is a really interesting and detailed business. But we've been entrepreneurs for so long. We know that we have what it takes to make it successful. And I'm really excited about, you know, what's to come with the trucking business.
That sounds really cool. What other stuff are you interested in?
I'm interested in touching more countries. I want to meet more women around the world and have an opportunity to teach them directly. I mean, we all know Tony Robbins, right?
Yeah.
That's the goal.
That's what you want to do.
Yes.
Set up a massive sort of global scale consultancy of that kind.
When I teach four or five women.
You used the word coach just now. Uh-huh. Right. I mean, that's a very particular choice of word.
Yes.
You didn't say consultant, you said coach. It's a difference.
Sometimes
sort of
I'm in the position of a coach. Yeah. Sometimes I'm in the position of a consultant.
What's the difference to you?
Well, when you're consulting, you're looking at their whole long-term plan and how you can be more strategic with their long-term plan. When you're coaching, sometimes that's the day-to-day. The day-to-day, getting their mindset in order, getting them ready for an event, getting them ready for something. So I'm coaching sometimes. Sometimes I'm consulting. My degree is in consulting.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, it's good to meet you too. You're the husband, the fiancé. What's your name?
Kevin.
Kevin, very nice to meet you, Kevin.
Yes, pleasure's all mine.
So, are you just here for support and for a little holiday, or are you actually part of the consultancy here?
You know, actually, that is her thing, and she is really good at it. You know,
I did notice you two had color coordinated this morning. Right. So you're meant to be a couple. This is a good thing.
Actually, that was accidental. You know,
I packed his clothes, so he didn't know what color.
Did you notice though that I asked the man the stupid clothes question, not the woman? Not like at the Oscars where they always ask the girls, "How are you wearing?" Yeah, and they ask the guy,
"The designer." You know,
exactly. Right. So Kevin, how did you meet this firecracker of a woman?
Actually, I was very fortunate. We have a mutual friend that thought we would be a great couple. We were both single, you know, and we've known this particular person for quite a long time. And so she just connected us on a blind date.
She's invited to the wedding.
She is.
Oh, for sure. She's great. She's a real dear friend.
So when did you guys get engaged?
We got engaged, what was that?
June.
Okay.
June. You're going to have to remind him of that.
Yes.
He'll need to
remember the wedding anniversary for sure. I'll have to tattoo that
somewhere.
Have
you got a date yet?
Actually, yes. We are looking to get married here in May.
Oh, yay.
Right.
Very good. Yeah. Isn't that exciting, Sia? Are you going to be the wedding coordinator?
I have been compared to Celine Dion. Welcome to South Africa. I'm the South African Celine Dion.
What are you going
to
be singing? I've got to help us.
All right, wedding singer.
No, I can tell you right now, you don't want that. So all right. I mean, you must be really impressed, not just with the fact that that this is your future wife and all the rest of it, but when you met her with some of the things that Christie's achieved in her life.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's quite an impressive array of awards. Let me just go through some of these. 2013 Women's Organization of the Year, 2012 Humanitarian of the Year, and nominated for Houston's Business Journal and Texas Southern University's 40 Under 40 list. You've consulted to businesses in Nigeria, Dubai, Monaco, London, Ghana, South Africa. You've written 3 books, The Master Strategy Planner, 52 Questions Journal, and The Sales and Money Journal, launched in January 2019. That's now.
Yes.
God, you are busy.
Yes.
How are you going to have time for this man?
You know, I tell women not to try to figure out balance, you know, long term. Just try to get through the day. How can I balance today? And I have to remind myself of that because I want to be a good wife too. You know, I want to be a good businesswoman and a good wife. And I think I can do both. But I just have to take it day by day.
But it's exciting, right? It's not terrifying. It's cool. Like you can handle all of this. You want to be able to do all the things you want to do.
Yes. And then I think once you meet the right partner, it's fun. It's fun. He came here just to support me.
That's beautiful.
Flew the whole way. We're very busy right now with the trucking. Kevin has an appraisal company in Houston. We're busy. But I said, I have to go and plan this myself. So
well, you're also going to look for a wedding venue.
Well, yeah, we're doing a couple things. So.
Well, listen, you're very, very welcome here. I'm very happy to hear that you're going to get married in South Africa. Congratulations on all
that.
But most especially, congratulations on the consultancy and the fact that you're going around the world and you're helping women who are running their own businesses. I hope that we have huge success on your side.
Thank you.
And that you do turn into the female Tony Robbins.
That's
sooner rather than later. Let's get that going. So, Christy Jackson, and very nice to meet you, Kevin.
Yes.
What's your surname, Kevin?
Muhammad.
You're going to take the surname?
Yes.
Okay. So, we're going to have to change the Christy L. Jackson business into the Christy Muhammad business.
Yes.
Very, very nice. Good to meet you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It is just before 8 o'clock, cliffcentral.com. Coming up in a little while, we have the series that we've done with Fluxman's for the Love of Law, where we take you behind the desks of some of South Africa's most important, impressive, and smart lawyers. All of that's on the way. Here is the unnews, the stuff that you need to know that's going on in the news. And then we will see you tomorrow, bright and early at 6 o'clock on this show. All right, here's what you need to know. Everyone is getting into the 10-year challenge on social media, from celebrities to housewives, side-by-side pics are proving so popular. Jimmy Money hasn't posted his yet, though, because mostly he still isn't sure where he stands currently in life. As the Brexit mess grows, so the pressure grows on poor Theresa May. Many believe her days as Prime Minister are numbered, but she isn't too bothered by this. She says she's already been approached by the hit TV show Strictly Come Dancing, a platform where she will receive far more respect and praise than 10 Downing Street could ever give her. And finally, Donald Trump hosted a college football team at the White House after they won their national championship. Sadly, though, due to the government shutdown, he didn't have the staff to prepare a sit-down dinner for them. Instead, he bought a whole bunch of fast food, which worked out really well. He says sports stars are very simple human beings. Just give them fast food and strippers and they'll also be happy. Kind of applies to him. That is all we've got for today. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9.
This is CliffCentral.com.